House, where the Siamese twins, Ronnie and Donnie Galyon, were in, I think it was San Bernardino, California, but again, I'm not sure of the locale, and were closed under one of these same type antiquated laws. Mm-hmm. And the local newspaper publisher had the newspaper's attorneys represent them, and the publisher paid for the case to do the same thing there. Mm. So there's really been no hassle, right, at any time since I've been in the business.
Mm-hmm. And as far as sideshow work goes, is there pretty much a large retired community here in Gibsontown?
No. Today, at one time, this was really the sideshow capital of the world, and you could have seen probably 50 professional sideshow attractions who lived here at that time. It was at that booming time in the community in that respect that the Giants Camp up here was established on the highway, which was owned by Al Tomaney, the circus giant, and his wife Jeannie Weeks, the half lady, and Al died quite a number of years ago, and excuse me, and his widow still owns the property. She still lives there, but she is almost a recluse, and but does very well financially with it. Mm-hmm. There's another lady here who will not grant interviews, and as one person spoke to her at the Showman's Club one day and says, "Oh, the Bulldog Girl." She says, "Don't call me that. I retired and put that act away 20 years ago." but she lives here. And Dolly Regan that I mentioned, the half lady, half baby. Little Pete, the dwarf that is here with me, he probably won't stay with me. He's not very reliable. He's only been here 28 years. and that's about the only... Only oddities around town now.
Where have they gone? Or
well, many of them have passed on. Many of them have bought homes in nearby communities. Priscilla, the monkey girl, and Emmett, the alligator man, her husband, bought a home up in Lutz, and they retired this year. Johan Peterson, the Iceland giant, retired about 6 or 7 years ago. Has a home over in Riverview. But they're very well scattered all over the country. Dickie Brisbane, the penguin boy that's with us, he lives in Bakersfield, California. And Emmett the Turtle Man owns several rental units and a home in the Carolinas. Our fat man, Big Bruce, lives in New Hampshire. So they're really just scattered all over anywhere.
Yeah. Do you think that, is there, I know we've talked to show folks about the community of show folks and how you have, you know, your own clubs and organizations. Is there that same kind of thing with sideshow people? Do they have a community?
The Showman's Club here in Gibsontown, the International Independent Showman's Association, is the largest social showman's club in existence. It was founded in about 1964, I think. And at the time that it was organized, it was probably a majority of show people. And most all of the attractions, and many were still living here then, and belonged to the club. There are so many fewer shows and getting to be fewer all the time. So, of course, for the very existence of the Showman's Club, there are not many show people actually in the club today. It is now made up of concessionaires and ride people and carnival people rather than show people for the simple reason there are not many shows left anymore. Now... Yeah. And, of course, I'm talking about the Carnival Fair shows, you know. Now, you go to Sarasota, and the show folks of Sarasota is still 99% show people, but that is circus people.
Yeah. Landon.
Yeah.
Could I have my pocketbook?
Yeah.
Hello. Hi there.
This is Gary.
Loriditch.
What's your last name again?
Loriditch.
Loriditch, that's
Hi.
Right.
Hi.
And this is, you introduce yourselves.
I'm Peggy Bolger.
I'm Betsy Peterson.
Landon.
Sit down, Gary, and I'll be with you in a few minutes. Gary is the showman. He has several shows. And in his collection, do you still have the gorillas?
Yeah.
He's got some honest-to-God gorillas, which there are not many of them around.
Really?
No. We saw some up at Bob and May Knowles.
He had an orangutan, and that one ended up at...
Bob's got it.
That was... What was it? Go-Go. 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 Yeah.
That was the one that...
It's up at Bob and May Knowles.
He's a red... Yeah,
Bob's. Yeah, we saw the gorilla.
Yeah, we saw... Yeah.
Yeah, that was Gary's.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of his favorite, I think.
Yeah, he liked Go-Go. Yeah.
Go-Go.
Who was the one who peed on you?
No.
Yeah. Well, why do you think sideshows have declined? Why?
Multiple reasons. One reason, of course, is that there are fewer attractions. There probably are just as many people... just as many attractions out there somewhere. We're not coming in contact with them. First, you must realize that in the heyday of the sideshow business, which was reached its pinnacle in the 30s and early 40s, and at that time there were over 100 10-in-1 sideshows in the United States and Canada. And at that time, the Ringling Circus imported... And throughout the years, as long as it was under canvas, imported sideshow attractions, I would say probably a great percentage, maybe as many as a third of the circus acts in the United States today are either people who came over for the Ringling Show or their predecessors, their families. Mm-hmm. And so the Ringling Show, the same with the sideshow people, there were many attractions. But... the last attraction that the Ringling Show brought to this country, as far as, the little midget they got, Mishu, is in effect a sideshow type attraction. If they were under canvas, he'd be in the sideshow rather than the big show. But the last exclusive sideshow attraction they brought over was Ted Evans, the English Giant. And I believe that was in 1952. I'm not certain of the year. And, of course, they quit under canvas in 1956. And so there was no point in them bringing anyone over. From 1960 through 67, we had the sideshow. I was partnered with Nate Eagles at Madison Square Garden. And then in 1973, I think it was the last sideshow the Ringling Show ever had that we produced for them at Washington, D.C., which was the last really big sideshow was ever presented. There, likewise, when there were 100 sideshows operating, every remote area of the country was visited at one time or another by one of these shows, and you would see and come in contact with the people. They're still out there, but if they want to get into the business, they don't know how. They have no contact, no way of knowing about it. And I feel this is the way that most of the people got into business. As examples, Little Pete came to work for us when we played his hometown in Breckenridge, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Dolly Regan joined a show at her hometown in Canada. Mm-hmm. And most of the people, Dickie Brisbane, joined us in his hometown in Jamestown, North Dakota. This is the way you get the people. Mm-hmm. So we're not coming in contact with them. So there are fewer attractions to go around. This is number one. The second thing, and probably one of the biggest reasons, is economy. And I'll take just 1 second. Here's another.
We were just talking. We had realized, I don't know, were you ever involved in the filming of the movie called Freaks?
That was filmed in 1932.
Oh.
Actually, it was filmed in 31. I was 1 year old.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was later than that. No, I didn't realize it was that old of a film.
There was another one made in the 60s called She-Freak.
G-Freak?
Uh-huh. But it was more of a sexploitation type thing, and used a few freaks, didn't amount to a heck of a lot. I have worked in, I think, 11 movies. and about 72, 73 television shows. I worked in all of the pictures I'm sure you've heard of because they were all Academy Award winners. Teamwork, Big Enough and Old Enough, Beware of the Black Widow, The End of Bimmy J, Shanty Tramp, Savages from Hell, Daredevil, Carney.
Well, now, Carney.
Did you work in that movie?
Actually, I shouldn't say I worked in it. My face may have been seen in it. We supplied all the equipment for that picture.
Ah.
And all of the people who worked in there were our people, all of the attractions. We did another one called Sideshow that has never been released. And then since then, there was another picture called Sideshow that Croft Productions did for television, which we did not do. And then a little sidelight to that, George Kirgo was the art director for Croft Brothers picture. And they called us and wanted us to do the picture. And so we said we were interested. So they flew in from Dallas to the fair and came out and saw the show. And they looked at it and they said, well, this is exactly what we want. And so what kind of money do you want? 3 weeks on location in Los Angeles. And we told them with the people and all. They said, well, that's a little high. And I said, well, you know, if you want a Cadillac, you pay Cadillac price. If you want something else, you get something else. So one of my competitors... Now, this is rumor because he didn't tell me this, so I won't say it as a fact, but he did the picture with his equipment, and I understand that he got about less than 10% of what we had asked to do the thing, but he was enamored with it because they were going to give him and his daughter a part in the picture. And I understand that they actually filmed them in a little speaking part. And then, as so often happens, clip, clip, onto the editing room floor, you know. So, we did a beautiful picture for Astral Bellevue Pathé. Oh, gosh, I can't even think of the name of the director, and he was so good. He had won a couple of awards for documentaries. And it's called Being Different, and it has not been released yet. And I hope it will be soon, because it is a beautiful picture on not just our people, but handicapped people in general.
And it's a documentary.
It'll be a documentary.
Was Carney accurate? I mean, have a lot of carnival people seen that?
Yes, and most of them didn't like it. it showed... Now, I feel that what it showed was authentic. It showed a very seamy side of the carnival business, which certainly that exists, the same as it exists in every town and city of the United States. And an awfully lot of carnival people were very angry about it. They like one woman says, she says, why doesn't it show the carnival kids instead of shacking up in the back of the concession stock trailer? Why doesn't it show a couple of the carnival kids from our families getting married at a big formal wedding down here at the Catholic Church? And some of the banquets we have, and maybe the charity things where they give away all of the baskets of food at Christmas time. I said, well, it's very simple. That wouldn't sell tickets. That's the whole thing, you know. It's, after all, it was commercial.
Don't you think maybe people have a mythology about what the carnival's like?
Yes, and of course, such pictures as that perpetuate it. And, you know, there's two sides to the story, and only one side has been shown. Circuses generally have come out in much better light because they usually show a much more happy, glamorous side of the circus.
Is there a division between circus people and carnival people? Do carnival people usually hang out together and circus people stick together?
Or? Well, yes, pretty much. They, for instance, over here at the club now, more and more we're getting more circus people involved in the club. But if you go over there, every Friday night they have a dinner dance. And you will find usually that all the circus people are congregated together. But the carnival people also segregate themselves into various groups. The ride people, the games people, the food people, the show people. Because each is a separate business and, you know, birds of a feather. Mm-hmm.
Is there a hierarchy of status, say, within the...
Well, yes, I think that the owners and operators, of course, form the top layer. Oh yeah, there's a definite caste system. Mm-hmm. If I may, before I had to leave there for a minute, the talking about the demise of the sideshows, and we touched on the reason because of the limited number of attractions. If you were to take all of the sideshows in existence today, and I believe there are seven, and put all of the attractions in one show, you would not have as big a show as we had in 1973 with the Ringling Show, or as big as the dean of the sideshow men was, Pete Cortez, in I'll say 1950, because the attractions are not available to us today. There are not that many professional people doing it. The main reason, however, that there are fewer sideshows is economics. A standard procedure up until the 1950s and even into the 50s, all carnivals of any consequence had tents and fronts and equipment. And they would advertise for the showmen in the billboard. And this is how I first got into carnival sideshow business. I joined a carnival. They furnished me the transportation. They furnished me a brand new tent, brand new banners, everything. All I had to have was the attractions and the sound equipment, which is always the thing you had to have. And the carnival took 40%. And the operator had to put it up and take it down and so on, but the carnival transported it, and you paid them 40%. You kept 60% and operated the show. And this was a standard deal pretty much throughout the industry. Today, to have a big sideshow, you're talking about an investment of $100,000 or more to start with. You transport it, you pay everybody, and the privileges start at 50% and go up. Some big fairs, some carnivals now, are getting as much as 65%. Then on top of that, you have to pay now for the trailer parking. You have to pay for car passes for the gate. You have to pay for the people passes for the gate, identification tags, and on and on. And so it is a thing where the carnival operators, in association with the fairs, have strangled the shows out of business financially. It is not economically feasible to operate one of these shows today. So you might say, well, why do you do it then? Of the past 6 years, we lost money with the big show 4 of the last 6 years. A year ago, it would have been December of 1980, we made the announcement to the trade press and so on that we were discontinuing, because it was no longer feasible. Now a new phenomena has arisen as the phoenix from the ashes called Pay One Price. And last year, 1981, for the first time, a major fair, the Ohio State Fair, went to a Pay One Price. The people paid $4 to get in the gate, and once they were in the gate, all the rides, all the shows, everything was included. And the operators of the carnival there, the Pew Amusement Company, were smart enough to realize that not everybody wants to get their stomach jarred out of place spinning around in a ride with the deafening noise penetrating the ears. And some people wanted to do something else. They had to have something to justify those people paying the money to subsidize the rides. And so they called upon us, and we produced 12 shows. And they probably, in all immodesty, I will say, were the finest shows ever presented on a Carnival Midway. We had a water review that had 3 gold medal Olympic winners in it. We had a review with a top-notch magician, some Las Vegas quality acts, production numbers, and live band. We had an on. It was 12 shows. And the fair paid us through the Carnival a flat rate. It was enough that it made it worth our while taking the big sideshow back out. Well, once that we had it out, then it was economically feasible to continue and make a limited number of big fairs. And we did not have a great season with it, but it at least showed on the black side of the ledger. So as long as, and I'm sure this idea will spread, in as much as the Ohio State Fair was the 3rd and 4th fair in attendance in the country, and all of a sudden it surpassed Dallas, Texas, it surpassed Toronto, Canada, and is now the largest attended fair in the world because of this idea was so dramatic. And so I'm sure other fairs are going to do the same thing, and other fairs have been talking to us about it. If this happens and becomes widespread, as I think it will, a whole resurgence in the business will occur. But this is the only way that it's going to happen, because under our former system, there just wasn't enough money left after paying the percentages and so on to operate.
What's in your big show? What kind of things do you have?
This last year, we had Louise Capps, the Armless Girl, Dickie Brisbane, the Penguin Boy, Bill Cole, the Quarterman, Lorette, the Tattooed Lady, Big Bruce, the Dancing Fat Man, Johnny Mia, the Human Blockhead, John Trower, the Sword Swallower, Little Pete, the Dwarf Eat Fire, Pooh Bah, the Pygmy, did the Iron Tongue Act. We had a lady, a snake charmer. We had Kelly Carlisle, rather, the lady knife-throwing act, and a couple of illusions. I had a magician.
It's a big show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen it. I know I've been to a couple of, you know, county and state fairs lately, and there really aren't any sideshow attractions. There's maybe one or two small.
Yeah, you have what we call singalos.
Yeah.
You know, like with you put an attraction just by themselves in a show, you know. But these are not really sideshows. These are, in the correct terminology, singalo shows. And then, as again, differentiated from animal shows, girl shows, motordromes, which is the motorcycle shows. But the sideshow, in the correct terminology, the sideshow is the 10 acts in one, the big performing freak show.
Huh. Is it always 10?
Well, no.
Sometimes, oh, okay.
Sometimes more, oftentimes less, but they call them 10 in ones.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. No.
I was wondering then if this does come about, you know, other fairs do go ahead with this, do you think that it'll be easier to find people, attractions? Will they then, you know, people will go to the fairs and see?
Yes, if this continues, and if the carnival operators, which I fear most of them are not that intelligent, but if they are intelligent enough to realize that they've got to give people something besides rides, because for one thing, Mr. Oud, who is the executive secretary of the Canadian Amusement Business Association, was the guest speaker at the Outdoor Amusement Business Association convention in Las Vegas this winter. And in his speech, he said virtually the same thing. If in the year 2000 you think there's going to be a lot of young people around to ride your rides, then you'd better think again, because we're having a very fast shift in our population, in the age. And and the smart operators, the smart carnival owners, and the smart fair managers are the ones that are going to offer something to somebody other than ages 6 through 26. And this is where the shows can come in. And if they do this on all levels of the industry, then you will certainly, you'll see the shows coming back. And as, for instance, with our show, we play every year virtually the same route. Columbus, Ohio, Canfield, Ohio, the Kansas State Fair, Oklahoma State Fair, and Texas State Fair. Louise Capps, the armless girl that I mentioned, discovered us at the Texas State Fair. She's from near Dallas. And she is the latest of the attractions to get into the business that I know of. But if the shows start fanning out and going to these smaller communities again, then people who are there will discover that there is a show business that they can be in, and will perpetuate the industry.
What's the history of Gibson Town itself? How did it start?
I don't know what its origination was. I can only tell you that from about the mid or late 30s, I would say probably the mid 30s, a fellow by the name of Eddie LeMay, who was a cookhouse operator, a carnival restaurateur, came down here. He was a fisherman, loved to fish, and he and his wife Grace came down here and discovered the Alafaya River area was great fishing, and they spent the winter here. So then the next winter, some of their friends joined them, and after a time, Eddie built a fishing camp and then a trailer park and a restaurant over on 41 Highway, which would be about the middle of town, was his location, called Eddie's Hut. And you also have to realize that for show people, to own homes is a fairly recent thing. They were nomads. And most of them didn't have any permanent residences anywhere. And so for many years, the people would come down here and would stay in Eddie's Trailer Park. And then the Giants Camp was built, which was at that time a much larger area than it is now. And the show people came down with their house trailers and spent the winter. And then somebody decided, hey, you know, it might be nice to build a house over there, and you know, so they this is what happened. And there's still quite a few show people live in the various trailer parks around here. And but this is how the town began, as far as show people are concerned. Eddie's place was the restaurant was demolished, as was much of the Giant Camp property when they widened the highway, when they doubled the size of the highway down there, and they took that out. And but even right now, I don't like bars, I don't go to them, but Showtown USA down here is an old showman in Andy Ozak, and Art's bar on down the street is owned by John Curtis, who's another showman, you know. So
do people gather there to just kind of have a central meeting place and talk? And yeah, that's neat.
And then, of course, they built the Showman's Club over here, which was the thing that really was the cement that really made it permanent.
Yeah. And, well, is this the largest show community probably in the United States?
Yes, I would say so. up until 10 years ago, it was a majority of show people here. The town is growing all the time, of course, and I would say the show people are now a minority. But yeah. There's a lot of them here.
Below 50%.
Oh, yeah, well below it now, I'd say. Mm-hmm. There's probably, I would guess, 3,500 show people here, maybe. Mm-hmm. And there's probably 10,000 people in the immediate vicinity now.
Do you think there will ever be any problem? I know who, Billy Rogers, I guess, we just talked to about zoning and everything. Do you think as show people become a minority, do you think there will be problems again
yes,
with zoning?
Yes, there probably will be in time to come. I think, of course, the prime example is Sarasota. John Ringling settled in Sarasota in the 20s. I'm trying to think now. He built his home, I think, starting in 28 or 29. And I should know these dates, and I don't. He brought the circus down there in about, I think, 31 or 32. The causeways leading to Siesta Key, Bird Key, and so on, were built by John Ringling using circus labor, circus winter quarters help. They really put Sarasota on the map. But in the 1950s, Sarasota zoned the circus out.
Mm-hmm. Zoned their big drawing card.
If John Ringling was still alive, he probably would have taken back all his art museums and take home from the state, you know. But, yes, it could happen. Here, it can happen anywhere. Those things, you know, things happen. Right now, we are